Did I put on the thing? Okay, I'm Rita Laurie, I'm the moderator, and this is Dr. Malinsky.
Malinsky, yes.
Sally Malinsky, and she's talking about reestablishing masculine identity, Latino and African American men with prostate cancer treatment related to erectile dysfunction and incontinence. Okay, from the UCLA.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for being here. I'm very delighted to be able to share with you some of the results of a project that we have been working on over a number of years in collaboration with the IMPACT program, which is a California-based publicly funded program that provides free prostate cancer treatment to low-income men who's with incomes under 200% of the federal poverty level and who are uninsured or underinsured. Okay. I have nothing to disclose. Okay, to start out with, I really would like to acknowledge some of those who have been indispensable in making this project a success. We have a couple of the people here today, Sarah Connor and Griselda Lopez. Laura Baybridge is administrator for the program and our nurse case manager who's developed and worked on the program, Marion Haskins. Maria Figueroa, who also worked with Griselda on the extensive translation process. I'd like to gratefully acknowledge the Department of Defense Prostate Cancer Research Program. And most of all, I really want to acknowledge the men who shared their stories with us, to whom this research and everything we do is dedicated, and they're the people that we really hope to serve and that the final results will provide some benefit to. Okay, so to start with, we know that prostate cancer is a very significant problem among men in the United States. In fact, it's the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the U.S. among men and the second leading cause of cancer death among men in the United States. Furthermore, we know that low-income men and uninsured men face disparities related to prostate cancer. They are diagnosed with later stage disease, and they have higher mortality and morbidity related to prostate cancer. And we see this commonly across all cancers. The Latino and African American men with whom we spoke for this study are very much overrepresented in California amongst the uninsured and low income. We also know that prostate cancer treatment has side effects, most notably erectile dysfunction and incontinence, that touch at the very core of masculine identity. And this identity is very much influenced by cultural beliefs, but also by context, by socioeconomic context, by historical context. And in order to develop interventions that are going to best serve these men and best help them manage and deal with these symptoms in a way that's meaningful to them, we need to understand the symptoms within their context in order to achieve the ultimate goal, which is to develop these strategies. Okay, therefore, the purpose of our study was to develop a descriptive model of processes used by these men to maintain their masculine identity. And this analysis focused on masculine identity with these prostate cancer treatment-related symptoms. And to accomplish this, our design was qualitative, grounded theory using in-depth, semi-structured interviews with 60 Latino and 35 African American men from the IMPACT program primarily. The interviews were conducted by language and ethnicity concurrent men. And they were conducted in the language preferred by the men. Okay, so we had interviews conducted in both English and Spanish. The Spanish interviews were, all interviews were transcribed verbatim. The Spanish were translated using a process for, translation process for qualitative research that was developed by our team, led by Ms. Lopez. And this process will be coming out in qualitative health research in early 09. And indeed, it was very important to develop this because, as you know, for qualitative research, we really want to capture the meaning of what is said. Grounded theory approach is articulated by Sharma's constructivist grounded theory was used for the analysis of the data of the interviews, and we also, infusing the study, were ethnographic undertones because of our focus and interest in the cultural aspects. Okay, so from this analysis, and this is where I want to spend the rest of the time, we saw major categories emerge related to masculine identity. And we'll be going through each of these. The notion of identity is dynamic and multidimensional, and the challenges were what then drove the renegotiation process as we saw it. Okay, so looking at masculine identity, as the men talked and as we looked at this data, we saw that the notions that masculine identity was not a static concept. Indeed, it changed over time, very much influenced by early experiences in life as the men talked about how they learned about being a man. And then as they moved through life, being context dependent. In other words, men would talk about being a man as being different when you're in a family context as opposed to when you're out with your buddies, as opposed to when you're at work gardening, as a gardener, as a service worker, in the various settings. And we know when we pull from Courtney's work on masculine identity that low-income ethnic minority men in the United States really represent a subordinated masculinity by which their ability to express or enact masculine identity is important to them is very much thwarted. And we'll get to some of those important aspects. Also, the dimensionality of the concept. Masculine identity contains physical, emotional, and relational dimensions. Again, it's not unidimensional. And some of the ways the men expressed this were things like man works, which becomes very important, and he guides people. He tries to carry everything out within your role as a man. You're a father, you're a brother, you're a husband. You carry many roles with the family. And then speaking to the physicality of the role, one man put it as, well, God intends man to have sex. And that becomes very important and highlights the focus on erectile dysfunction that we saw in the interviews. Okay, as the men talked about going through life, they talked about challenges to masculinity, or these challenges emerged. And what they were challenges to components of this masculine identity, roles that were important to feeling like a man as they talked about their identity. Work was a very important piece of how the men felt masculine, being able to work. And remember, the work that most of these men were doing was very physical and required physical strength. So that then strength becomes another important characteristic of masculinity. But as we'll see, strength, while at one point in life focuses more on physicality, it can also include emotional strength. So one can be strong physically as well as emotionally. Sexual performance was talked about heavily, particularly as one of the symptoms of having been treated for prostate cancer is erectile dysfunction. control came across, and we also see it in the literature on masculine identity, is another important aspect of that masculine role. But again, we saw different components of control. Control could be control of others, control of situations, or control of self. And then finally, independence. A man, in order to be a man, has to be independent, has to be self-sufficient, and is self-contained. Now, situations that challenge those aspects can be aging. As a man gets older, and we saw this particularly in the Latino population, one expects to decline in physical strength, in sexual ability, in independence, and in control. Comorbidities also challenge these major components of masculine identity. Many of the men, again, had other diseases. They didn't just have prostate cancer. So that interacted with this whole process. And then finally, our focus, or not the only focus, was these treatment-related side effects. Okay. So as the men talked, these challenges set into motion this renegotiation process, which really had four components. One of the aspects was this whole notion of normalizing. Men looked at ways to normalize, and this was particularly in related to erectile dysfunction. You didn't see normalization of incontinence as much. So age, remember, age, while being a challenge, could also be used as a normalizer to help promote dealing with or living with erectile dysfunction. Many of the men expressed sentiments such as, well, if I was younger, it would be much worse to have erectile dysfunction. I've already had my kids. It's not as important anymore. I've lived my life. I've had plenty of sex. It's okay now. We saw this more so in the Latino men than in the African American men, this expression of these sentiments. Other men, the men who were experiencing comorbidities, either of themselves or their partners, had already incorporated erectile dysfunction as a part of their life. So it wasn't anything new. It was no big deal when they had their prostate cancer treatment and erectile dysfunction was a side effect. As one man put it, and this particular man had diabetes and had been living with erectile dysfunction for a number of years because of diabetes, he said, well, I was already a member of the Dead Bird Club, so no big deal. And then finally, we saw this in all the men, a way of normalizing erectile dysfunction and incontinence was actually minimizing the symptom in the context of having been treated for prostate cancer. In other words, it's normal to have erectile dysfunction. It's normal to have incontinence. It's normal to have symptoms when you've been treated for prostate cancer. And these symptoms are a small price to pay for getting rid of the cancer. As some of our men talked about, they said, well, it was a choice between life and sex. And of course, I'm going to choose life. As we looked at other components of this process of renegotiation, there was a balancing act going on. Men were balancing hopeful waiting with accepting and moving on. And they did this in a number of interesting ways. One way of doing that was keep moving the time of expected resolution, be it for incontinence or erectile dysfunction, further into the future. So if the symptom did not resolve by a time you expected, you said, well, it's getting better, so I think maybe in 6 months it's going to be better. They said I'd get my erectile function back in a year. Well, it's been 11 months. I'm still not having erections or full erections. So I think maybe it's going to take 2 years. so that that target date would be moved and moved. And that helped maintain hope. There was also hope that natural function would return, and this was in relationship to erectile dysfunction. And this is one of the areas in which our African-American men and our Latino men talked about things a little differently. Our Latino men talked about being reluctant to use erectile aids or medications. Many of our Latino men would talk about, well, yeah, the doctor gave me a prescription for the medication, but now I haven't gotten it filled. I haven't used it. Maybe in the future I'll use it. And it was a sense that by not using this medication or not moving to these aids, in addition to wanting function to be normal and unaided, it was a sense that, well, as long as I didn't use it, there was always hope. If I use it and it doesn't work, then hope is gone. Our Latino men also talk very heavily about these symptoms being God's will, but as we are finding in another piece of work that we're doing with this population, that really was not a sense of passivity or fatalism, but was used as an empowering mechanism for these men. As I said, our African-American men, while maintaining hope, in the meantime, they were very willing and anxious to use erectile aids, medications, and much more willing to explore alternative means of intimate expression. So this was one of the areas, this balancing act, where we saw some of the cultural differences coming out. The concept was common in both, but the enactment of the concept we saw had cultural variations. There was also an examining or a re-examining of values, particularly related to strength and control. We saw that strength was expanded to, as I said, this emotional strength and control of self. And indeed, the experience of having been treated for prostate cancer and having gotten through this was remarked upon as an indicator of, yes, I am strong. I got through this. I've had prostate cancer, and I've dealt with it like a man. So I'm strong. Relationships were reexamined, especially relative to sexual function and relative to either the ability to express and have intimate relationships without erectile function, or the place or importance or lessening of importance of sexual function. And then finally, these men embraced, particularly the Latino men, embraced being different. They talked about, well, those men, other men, value having lots of women, being macho, but I'm different, and this is how I'm different. And this difference had to do with how they saw masculinity prior to their prostate cancer versus after their prostate cancer. So actually what we saw, or the way I kind of graphed this out, was this shifting of priorities moved from waiting, and this can be looked at age dependent too, but moving from a waiting on the physical dimensions to distributing or shifting that weight more to emotional and relational dimensions of masculinity. And we can then look at this whole model that we developed, our theory grounded in the data of these men as they talk to us, our renegotiation process here, set in motion by these altering factors. And again, thank heavens that masculine identity is dynamic and multidimensional, because this allows it to change within different contexts. And all this is happening within a socio-cultural economic context and with a historical within a historical context. And let me make a couple of notes here. Our African-American men were of an age, we're talking about 45 to 65. We're in an age where they lived through the Civil Rights era. And the conflict of that time and had experienced a great deal of conflict and discrimination. And a number of our African-American men, when talking about how do you become a man, they said, well, you just survive. Becoming a man means just surviving. So that had been a historical context. And we saw, and of course, all these men and our Latino men are living in a political environment where the Latino men are experiencing persecution. We're in a political discourse on immigration and the thoughts and concerns about documentation and a great deal of fear in approaching the healthcare system and treatment within the healthcare system. So these are a couple of the historical and political context within which this process, and this is what leads to, remember I talked about the subordinated masculinities. This is what subordinates these men as men within our culture, and within which they're facing a disease which touches at the core of masculinity. We saw a couple of differences, and this is very small, but something I hope to pursue. Two of our black men were Jamaican-born, and two of our Latino men were U.S.-born. And we saw that the U.S.-born Latino men told stories much more similar to our U.S.-born African-American men. And our Jamaican-born Latino men told stories much more similar to our Mexican and non-U.S.-born Latino men. So, again, while this was small, it triggers, you know, maybe what we're seeing more is related to the environment of upbringing as opposed, along with the sociocultural environment, whether you're brought up in an environment where you are a minority or experience discrimination. Okay, so what happened as a result of this process? Most of our men developed or came out of this talking about really feeling a sense of completeness, that they had gained strength from this struggle, and that they had developed a sense of mutual respect with their partners and with others. And coming out of this was saying, well, I am a man. I'm still a man. And being a man is more than having sex. This prostate cancer, I have come out of this as a strong man. We had a few men, however, who did not resolve or did not go through this renegotiation process, leaving them with a sense of impotence, interesting word as a synonym for erectile dysfunction, being feminized. In other words, one man talked about, well, all I can do is little tasks around the work, around the house. I can only do women's work. And these same men talked about feeling less than a man. So looking at this, the good news that came out of this is that masculine identity, really in the face of prostate cancer treatment, can be successfully negotiated, even by men who have very minimal resources. However, the one advantage our men had were nurse case managers who helped guide them through the process. I think the implications as we look towards intervention is that we support this renegotiation process, identify men, perhaps those who are unpartnered. Partners were an important supporter of this process, who perhaps need additional support and facilitation. So to the last thought I'd like to leave you with, my opinion, is that I feel it's incumbent upon us, clinicians, researchers, and a society, to foster those positive properties and to work with the positive cultural aspects to support our men as they deal with these daunting situations. So thank you very much.
For that, you know, we don't want to take away from our other speakers. Well, if we have time at the end, or you can see Sally after the presentation, that would be great. Our next speaker is Susan McCabe. Dr. McCabe is talking about health experiences of women living in rural or frontier communities. Now, let's just... And then...
I think if we just close this one.
Oh, yeah, we can just go to the next one.